Welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's live streaming interview series, where leading New Thought teachers, speakers, and authors share the intimate stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that inspired them the most on their spiritual journey. From well-known classics to hidden gems you might never have heard of, the No BS Spiritual Book Club saves you time and money by sharing reliable recommendations from those who've walked the path before you. The No BS Spiritual Book Club, the only No BS guide to the best spiritual books to inspire your own journey of self-discovery. Here's your host, founder of the No BS Spiritual Book Club, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello and welcome. Joining me today to share the 10 best spiritual books that inspired her life journey is futurist, systems scientist, and award-winning pioneer and best-selling author in human development and systems change, Dr. Anna Lois Smitsman. The founder and CEO of Earthwise Center, initiator and architect of the Earthwise Constitution and Earthwise Game Plan for a Planetary Civilization, Dr. Anna Lois is the co-author of the award-winning number one bestsellers of the Future Humans trilogy with Dr. Jean Houston. Book one, The Quest of Rose, has already won the 2022 Silver Nautilus Award, and book two, Return of the Avatars, has won the Gold Nautilus Book Award of 2023. So I don't know what's left for book three to win, but we'll find out. Anna Lois, thank you for joining us and welcome.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be with you.
You too. So you hold a master's degree in law and judicial political sciences from Leiden University. You received a degree of doctor from the Maastricht Sustainability Institute at the School of Business and Economics at Maastricht University, both of which are in the Netherlands. Your PhD dissertation, Into the Heart of Systems Change, is being implemented worldwide for systemic transformation in economics, education, politics, and governance through your proposed transition plan for a thrivable civilization. And you've won a number of awards, including the 2022 Visioneers Lifetime Achievement Award and the Africa's Women Leaders Citation in 2018. So, taking the focus of your academic studies and accomplishments into account, the first question that I want to ask you is, what were you like as a child?
Oh, I love that question. Well, depends on what age. So in my early childhood, very cheerful. My mom always used to call me Little Sunrise and very, very adventurous. In the second part of my childhood, unfortunately, I got quite ill. So there I was a little bit more withdrawn. Yeah. But in the first stages of my childhood, always out, always exploring, loved animals, always with the animals, talking out in nature. Yeah. Really.
Were you a great student? I mean, it seems to me that your mind must have been going all the time.
Yes, it did. And that was exactly the problem. Because I thought that school was terribly boring. It didn't make any sense to put all that information in. But once I understood that you just needed to put that temporarily in so you could give the right answers, then I was like, okay, I'll do it then. But I didn't find that information very, very relevant. And because my mind was always so creative, I had incredible difficulties with multiple choice, for example. I just could not answer a multiple choice question because I could make sense of every single option.
Single one, yeah. I can make that work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, some lifetimes you just want to race through those early years to get to the real thing.
That's how it really felt. Yeah, exactly. To learn what I wanted to learn.
So at what point did the mystic side of your nature reveal itself?
As long as I can remember. I remember that when I was 1 year old, I even had memories of being in the womb of my mother. That's how far
really
back it goes. Yeah. I remember being inside her, and through her, remembering the people that she met, really quite unusual, which I later checked and said, you met that person and that person, you had this. And she was like, well, how do you know? I said, well, I was inside you. Yeah, but you're not supposed to know. So somehow, yes, it's like that memory was always there. So I remember being very, very young, 1 year old. I just learned to walk, and I'm standing in the kitchen, and I heard my parents talk, but in a way that they were clearly not agreeing with each other. And they were kind of talking over me. And I felt their thoughts, and I had kept that connection with my mother to just talk inwardly, you know, to feel her, to know what's going on for her. And then I remember looking at them both thinking, why are they using this strange language? They're using these words. They're clearly not understanding each other. Why don't they just communicate directly? Then you know exactly what you feel. Yeah. So, yes.
Already. Did that capability make it hard for you as a child growing up at school, etc.? Because you obviously had a much greater awareness.
Yeah, it was hard. It took me a long time also to trust people. Yeah, because when I was little, it's like I had a sense of what they were feeling and what they were thinking, and what they were saying was not the same. So I felt there was this disconnect. When I saw human beings, I thought, it's just strange. People are very complicated. They're not expressing what they really feel. Yeah. And I noticed that a lot of them were very disconnected from life. When I was with the animals, I would talk to the animals. You know, I'd hear their thoughts. And the human world seemed so disconnected. So I remember already as a little girl saying, whenever I grow up to be an adult, I'm going to keep who I am and keep that really deep connection, with life. Always, also when I went to bed, I remember always talking to this greater intelligence and this greater wisdom, and telling it all my stories of the day, recounting my entire day, and then intending what I would want to see changed for the next day. Nobody had taught me that practice. Later, only I realized that this is actually a meditation practice to recount your entire day, learn the lessons, and then see what you can change. But nobody had taught me that. But that just felt natural thing to do.
Do you remember the first spiritual book that you read?
Yeah, fairy tales, the Brothers Grimm. So for me, those were my spiritual books because it was like, exactly. I love them. And they were not like the Disney fairy tales. They were much more, a little bit more gruesome, I suppose. not this all this sweet sugar coating. Yeah, and I used to read them over and over again before going to sleep. And I used to love that. The prince that transforms into a bear, the mermaid, the unicorn, near the waterfall, the wise woman cloaked as the lady that you see, in the kitchen, all of those. So yes, I think that these were the first really spiritual books for me. All of those fairy tales, European fairy tales, growing up in the Netherlands, of course, as well. And nature also. Nature was just always my book. I always had this sense that we are surrounded by a living library of the universe itself. So I just close my eyes and connect and talk to the universe and let the answers come and it will guide me. Yeah.
So how did you find the process of having to cull your list of books, favorite books, down to just 10?
That it was a challenge, actually, but very, very good. Yeah, and very rewarding because, it's like you helped me reconnect with so many earlier stages of my life. Funny enough, all the books I picked were actually from my 20s, my 30s. Because they had a profound, that's what you asked, which books had really profound influence on your life. And they had. And so I thank you for helping me reconnect, because as I was going through that list and remembering, then it's like you're reconnecting with these friends, your books, those friends exactly.
So let's start with your first book, which is by one of the foremost teachers of Native American wisdom, Jamie Sams, and the book is Dance in the Dream: The Seven Sacred Paths of Human Transformation, published in 1998.
Yeah, that book, I have read that so many times. For me, that was such a guide, especially in my early 20s. I was going through a lot of spiritual experiences at the same time being at university in an environment where I couldn't share about that. I didn't quite understand what was happening. A lot of energetic experiences as well, seeing visions, having very, very vivid dreams, seeing into the future. And I didn't know where to go with all of that. And her book, it was so beautiful because not only did she help to make sense of what was going on, but she was showing the stages and the pathways and how to kind of, you know, be with that. For example, when it's time to just surrender to the great mystery, when there's a time when there's a, you may feel a great void, she explained. But trust the universe because you're being reborn at a higher level that at that stage you can't yet see and you can't yet sense. And I remember at that time of my life, I was feeling this void. I was looking for my purpose. Why am I here? There must be more to do. I couldn't connect with a lot of the roles in society that were out there. I just finished my master's degree. I was starting a PhD in Australia at this time. This was in 1998. And I just felt very alone, in fact, very alone in a world that I felt, no, I don't want to be in those roles. There's more to life. And I want to be with this process. And so in her book, going through that journey, going through the process, understanding what's happening at different stages. Her explanation that when you go through these very deep, profound transformation experiences, that your relationships change as well. And that it's okay. And that there are sometimes old friends go, new friends come. So yeah, it really gave me a way of being with the change. And also her system, of course, of the medicine wheel, understanding that not only do we go into these different stages as kind of levels of consciousness and development, but also that in the medicine wheel, whether you're in a stage of the East or in the South, the lessons of the South and the West and the North, they're all different. So it gave me also that kind of structure to know, you know, where am I? What am I learning? What do I need to be completing? And to relate with every experience that I was going through, really as a lesson, as a blessing, sometimes also a test to see, okay, you like to go further and you want that or you want that responsibility, but are you ready? Are you ready to hold it in integrity? And how can you be with that? And also the teachings of self-love and self-care. So, yes, I so appreciate that she brought that book forward.
So book two is by one of the greatest spiritual figures of our age and the second most recommended book in the No BS Spiritual Book Club's archive. And the book is Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, and it was published in 1946. Yes, do you recall when you came across this book?
Yes, I was living in Australia around the same time then. Yes. And I was going deeply into Kriya Yoga, in fact, at that time. And I met one of his disciples, yes, who had been initiated out of that lineage into Kriya Yoga, went through the Kriya Yoga initiations as well. So I felt like being closer to the transmissions of those pathways. So that book, similar to Jamie Sam's, really helped me to make sense of those deeper experiences. Also his commitment to the journey, his trust in himself, I found that really, really remarkable. And describing things and experiences that I'd had in my life, but I knew if I talk about it, people would think I'm insane. Where I, in that culture, that was okay in his culture, yes? Yeah. That was actually the kind of first really deep introduction to non-dualism as well. And it really opened my kind of love for the Vedic teachings as well. A different way, all that whole Vedic cosmology of life as well. Yes. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I love it.
Definitely a game changer.
It's a game changer. And his name means the holy swan, right? So I felt also in that way, the journey of the swan, I used to feel like a little Ugly Duckling, that story, and then here comes this one. Yeah. So I used to think of myself as a little bit old, not quite fitting in when I was little. And then the process of the surrendering, of becoming this one. And so I found that also, that's another connection I felt with his, reading his story, that it was okay to trust in yourself.
Yeah.
Becoming a swan.
Yes.
In the stages. Yeah. Yes.
So book number three is Voices of the First Day, Awakening in the Aboriginal Dream Time by Robert Lawler, published in 1991.
Yeah, so at that stage, I just started my PhD, my first PhD research at the Australian National University. And I'd taken a huge topic, and that was institutionalizing the future based on Indigenous wisdom. So I was trying to weave together cosmologies of time, Indigenous wisdom, quantum physics, biology, anthropology. It became an incredible project because I had this very deep sense that all of our Western systems being coded by clock time had lost that Indigenous understanding of time in terms of continuity with the dream time, the relationship with the ancestors, both in past and future, as well as the cyclical nature of time. So I was really looking for a deeper connection with the Australian Aboriginal wisdom. And although he is not an Australian Aboriginal or Indigenous person himself, he spent a lot of time with them. And his account and his understanding and the transmissions he had received and permission of what he had to share was incredible. So when I was reading his book and I was doing also my PhD research and really wanting to honour that tradition, I went to my Australian Aboriginal friends where I spent a lot of time with. I showed him this book and I said, does this really represent your culture? Has, you know, did he do this in a way that you would say yes? And they said, yes, he did an incredible job. He's even shared ceremonies in that book, a woman's business and men's business that, well, hadn't really seen the daylight in that way. So, and the impact it also made for me is you go back to one of the oldest continuous living cultures on our planet. And I had, before that, I had just been in South Africa for a year. And then there is often that sense as if, you know, as if the cradle of humanity began in Africa, but then I felt, what if it began in Australia? Perhaps it is even, it has an even older story. And that's also what brought me then to Australia, brought me to spend time with the Australian Aboriginal people, going deeply through this book to really honor their cosmology. And when you go through that, you see also the genius, the intelligence, the complexity of the culture. So many different languages that and the customs. So I thought, wow, the way that kind of the English explorers who came to Australia were, you know, representing them was so wrong. They're so far advanced, and that all of that customs and yeah. So yes. For me, it was a huge eye opener, and it was another really a guidebook that I kept going back to that to really honor and understand their cosmologies, their ways, their deep sense of oneness, belonging to nature. That they say the land grows you up. You know, you belong to the land. It's not like you own the land. The land owns you.
Yes.
You're part of a greater dreaming. Yeah. You're part of a greater story that is storying and restoring your life. So, yes.
So is What's it like in Australia now? Are people beginning to appreciate that culture more?
I think it depends on where you ask. I left Australia in 2006, so there's of course been a, you know, I'm Mauritius now, a lot of changes. I lived there for 8 years. When I was there, there was still a huge gap. That's what I've noticed, not really the full understanding, not the full inclusion. Or very romanticized, but not really honoring, you know, their relationship with the land. The whole issue around the stolen generations. All those kids were taken away from their parents, and this entire gap. I mean, so much intergenerational trauma. The fact that they were only acknowledged as humans officially there towards what was in the 1970s. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yes. So there's a lot of healing. But yeah, they took me in and they accepted me, I think because of, you know, my way of being with nature, that deep sense of connection just made it the connection immediate. So they never treated me as this Western woman or this Dutch woman. They treated me as kin. Yeah, it's very beautiful.
Yeah, so much wisdom. So book number four is The Grail Enigma, The Hidden Heirs of Jesus and Mary Magdalene by Lawrence Gardner. This one was published in 2008, a very popular book.
Exactly. Well, that brought me in touch with my European culture and ancestry. So as I had been looking for this deeper spiritual connection and understanding and going to Africa, going to Australia and the Native American, I felt there was more to my own roots. So it's as if my ancestors called me back. And this is when I found his book. I had just given birth to my first son. Yeah. So this was around 2008, 2009, and I'd had a lot of very, very profound dreams about belonging to this Merovingian ancestry, and I didn't know where that came from. I knew that from my mother's side, her name is Cornet. We came from a French royal family line, and so I didn't understand what all the visions were, what the messages were that were coming in my dreams. And so then eventually went back also to France. I did a little pilgrimage there to reconnect with my ancestors more deeply. But when I found this book and I started reading that, and the deeper stories about this Grail lineage and what the Grail meant and the Grail quest, I really felt like somebody was explaining a very important part of my own ancestry that I had lost touch with, and that my ancestors, in fact, my parents, were not aware of. And their parents were not aware of, but it's like the transmissions continued over time. That's what's so powerful, and what, you know, what the Grail for me, the quest really meant was this deeper search for a higher code of ethics. It's this higher form of love, unconditional love, and deep service, and so that when you find those Grail codes. Not just as a relic, but as a code of living, a code of a commitment, a deep commitment of service to life, service to humanity, and trusting that power of love and how that will guide us. So that's what that did for me.
So book number five is The Art of Dreaming by Carlos Castaneda. This was published in 1993, and it's another book that profoundly impacted your life.
Exactly. And so this was still in the time, again, when I was in Australia, the last years I was living there, and being a bit of a dreamer myself, and so always kind of transitioning between different states of consciousness and getting an information not in my dreaming, I found reading that book fascinating, because it was like he was describing that journey and the codes. But I had this very strange experience every time I was reading that, as if the way he was describing going into the dream time and having your dreaming body, as if part of it was true and as if part of it he on purpose changed it slightly, as if it was a protection for another book. So every time I read that book, and I went back to it often because of this experience, I had this sense I was reading two different books, that there was another book inside that book. And so, yeah, it was like reading through the words.
Yes.
Because if I went literally with the words, I thought, no, some of it doesn't make sense. I don't think it works like that. But then it's like there's an other book underneath it. And that's quite masterful that he managed to do it in that way. Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a short break now, and we'll be back in a few minutes with more from Anna Lois on her 10 best spiritual books. So stay tuned.
Om Times TV.
Maya Angelou once said that there is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and when I'm not hosting Om Times Media's flagship radio show, What Is Going On, and the No BS Spiritual Book Club, I help people share their untold stories. Books are my life, my joy, and my passion. And there is no greater reward than helping aspiring writers get their books out of their heads and into the hands of those who are waiting to read them. If you feel that you have a book in you, but don't know where to begin, visit sedgbeer.com. Click on the Work With Me tab and find out how my experience helping others tell their stories might be just what you've been looking for. That's sedgbeer.com, sedgbeer.com.
Imagine becoming a super influencer. Reinvent yourself, invest in your brand, and then manifest your success with a robust, spheric approach. OWN Times Media and Broadcasting offers a unique and multifaceted way to become the spiritual and conscious influencer you deserve to be by putting your message across our powerful platform with its proven record of integrity and excellence. Through our produced shows, OWN Times offers the opportunity to become a social media TV personality, a radio show host, an OWN Times magazine columnist, and a syndicated podcaster, all in one shot. By live streaming your show on OWN Times TV and broadcasting it across the extensive OWN Times radio and TV networks, you become more than a host. You become an ambassador and a force for positive change. OWN Times. Open yourself to the possibilities.
There are 16 million children struggling with hunger in America. That's one in five daughters, sons, neighbors, and classmates who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Yet billions of pounds of good food go to waste every year. It's time we do something about it. Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks that helps provide meals to millions of kids and families in need. Visit feedingamerica.org to help them feed even more. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America.
Welcome back. Dr. Annalise Smitsman, book number 6 is a nice synchronicity because it is a book that I am reading right now in preparation for an interview in a week or two's time with the author. And the book is The Cosmic Hologram, In Formation at the Center of Creation by Jude Cowevan, which was published in 2017.
Yeah, Jude is a very dear friend. And so we've also published our own articles and chapters together. So I found her book when I was doing my second PhD, and this was Into the Heart of Systems Change. So I'd been, as part of that research, really going into living systems and wanted to understand the cosmology of living systems. So I wanted to understand more of the nature of the universe. And then dear friend of mine, Alexander Laszlo, would been good friends with Jude, said, you need to read her book. This is going to be, you know, really important. Will help you understand a lot of things, also about the deeper laws. So as I connected to her, I read her book, I'm like, ah, yes, it provided so many answers because I didn't quite buy into the story of the entropy. You know, I felt that the story that people are being told over time, everything will just kind of collapse and fall down. Yeah. I thought, no, that's not what I see with living systems. They're also deeply coherent. They learn, they develop, and they evolve. But given that I had that kind of spiritual insight, that information is never lost, even when after death, the information of that process stays. And she explains that scientifically. So that's when, after reading her book, and then through my many conversations with her, when she started to understand that the reinterpretation of the first two laws of thermodynamics as laws of informational dynamics, to understand how the universe itself is like a great cosmic hologram, and where this deeper information that precedes space and time is deeply meaningful information that informs how life grows. And as we're going from this journey, from the what she calls the big out breath, from the beginning of our universe to the end, that it's not a story of loss or chaos or entropy, but it's a story of deepening complexity, deepening evolutionary coherence, as long as that information is embedded. So through the kind of framework and scientific research that she provided so beautifully and written in such an elegant way as well, I then brought kind of all of my research from the living systems perspective. So kind of we brought that together. And yes, that became the beginning of an amazing friendship, as well as being colleagues. And yeah, so much respect for her and her work.
Yes, me too. So book number 7 is Consciousness and the Universe, Quantum Physics, Evolution, Brain and Mind by Sir Roger Penrose, Stuart Hameroff, Subhash Kak. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Interestingly, this one, which was only published in 2011, I could not find on Kindle. So it's only available as paperback.
I have it on Kindle, yeah.
You have it on Kindle?
I have it on Kindle, yes.
That's interesting because I searched everywhere for this one and all I could find was no, definitely not.
Maybe they removed it. Yes, I bought that also again for the PhD research into the heart of system change. And after reading Jude's book and understanding more about the foundations of consciousness as primary, as the foundations of reality, this book edited by Penrose with all this collection of incredible scientists and thought leaders and even astronauts, yeah. Going more deeply, it's not an easy book to read. I mean, it's not a storybook in that sense. It's a bit more scientific, but having all these different perspectives there of kind of merging the scientific and perspectives and understanding of the nature of consciousness with this deeper spiritual understanding of the primacy of consciousness that we know throughout the ancient Western traditions, I found it very, very important. And it was a very important kind of research also for all of my work that I was doing, yeah, to see if we are living in a universe of consciousness and not looking at consciousness as something that emerges from matter, yeah, but that the nature of reality itself is consciousness. These experiences taking place in consciousness, and consciousness is able to localize itself in finite realities, embodied experiences like us in here talking. But all of that is happening in an incredible field, an infinite field of consciousness that we are. It's not something that we have, it's what we are. Yes, who we are.
Absolutely. Yes, number eight is a little bit different. It's Nelson Mandela, A Portrait of an Extraordinary Man by Richard Bengel. What was it about this book that really grabbed you?
I went to South Africa in the last year of my master's degree in law and political science. So apartheid just finished. So this was 1996, and Mandela had come to power in 1994. So living there and in the process of the Truth and Reconciliation Committee had just started. And the way that he was guiding that whole process, I found it so profound. The way that you're leading with forgiveness, that creating a safe space, that the horror stories could be told. And if you're forthcoming with that, doesn't mean that you're going to be convicted. So living there, being there in South Africa, going to the place where he was kept as a prisoner as well, seeing what he must have gone through on that small little island in his little cell. I really wanted to learn more. I wanted to learn more about him and about his life. And to me, he became really a role model of kind of the leadership that I feel inspired by. And how he stayed true in that way also to the African wisdom, the African way of leadership, and how, although he lived all that time in prison, he didn't make his mind to prison. So he kept his very, very clear line between, you know, I'm not going to let the change go inside. I remain free. I remain what I am. I'm alive here for a greater purpose. And that he had that trust to let the right conditions of time, the process of the collective change, the outcry also that then went all overseas, and his own readiness to become the leader who he was meant to be. That to me, there's so much in that story, because there's so much also that I have found in my own life of sometimes you just need to be patient. Sometimes you're working hard on things, but then isn't yet the time is ripe for that. In those periods you can feel like you're doubting yourself, but really to trust and to have courage to, I always say, for me, leadership is you leading for what is necessary, not for what is easy, not what gives you popularity. Leadership means guiding people to the changes that are necessary. And that is what he represents to me.
Book number nine is Crystal Clear, Practical Advice for Mahamudra Meditators by Kenchen Threngu Rinpoche. There's so many different pronunciations of the last word. It's difficult to know which one to use.
Yes.
Tell me about this.
So I was also this, I was living in Australia around the same time as the autobiography of a yogi that I found this path. And I was getting really interested also in the Dzogchen teachings. So I was going at that time to a Tibetan Rinpoche in Canberra, where I was taking the whole training into the Heart Sutra. And this tension or the paradox, so-called paradox, between form and formlessness. And so when I was reading this book, what made a profound impact for me is to understand the different layers of the mind and to get in touch with this ground luminosity, and to understand that ground luminosity of the nature, again, of consciousness, it is always there. And then also his teachings of the five wisdoms and of all of the wisdoms, there were two that really stood out for me. One is the all-accomplishing wisdom. So that's trusting that the universe and consciousness is self-actualizing. You don't have to do anything for that. You just have to work with that process. It's not like that the human has to decide, now I'm going to self-actualize. No, you're part of a self-actualizing process of consciousness that's eternally happening. And it's happening always within us. So to trust, that was the first one. And the second wisdom was the mirror-like wisdom that I also described. And in that saying that, you know, when you are in the mirror-like wisdom, be like the mirror. So in the mirror, everything is reflected, but the mirror doesn't become what it reflects. And just that shift, that really shifted something very deep for me, because through that, now I could just work with my mind as that mirror. So allowing the thoughts to come, the feelings, the memories, going beyond that, seeing the patterns of the thoughts, the feelings, the memories, and the behaviors. But then being in that mirror-like quality, so you see it all reflected within it, and it rises up, and it comes, and it goes. But the consciousness remains. It makes it possible to have that experience. So it kind of grounded me in such a deep place within myself. I also went through that process, then I actually stopped that first PhD then after 2 years. And I went for 7 years, spent 5 hours per day in meditation.
Wow.
Because I just wanted to be with that process. I wanted to better understand myself, the worlds that were within, and my own transformation, because I felt that if I trust in that, life will prepare me through that process for what I'm really meant to do here on this planet. But to do that, I need to do that before I have children, because I thought when being as a mother, which I am now, it's more challenging. So I'm so glad that I took those 7 years. Yes. And that book really helped me through that process to trust in the primordial nature and the ground luminosity of our inner being.
Well, the final book in your list is The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying by Sogyal Rinpoche, 1992. And it's another book that really profoundly impacted you. So you really have chosen the 10 books that, really wound you up and set you off on a new path.
They really did, because similar in this one as well, going through the stages of dying and the what it calls the bardo stages also. And so that stages that the consciousness goes through after the release of the body. And what I learned from him in that book is the dissolution of in the elemental bodies. So the body of the earth dissolving into the water. Then all of yourself was made of that the water. Being purified by the fire, evaporating in that, the fire going back into the air going back into the ether. And when you go with those stages very consciously, so that's the process of dying and dissolution, seeing when it is starting to happen already. I went through that process many times myself, so going through my own death and rebirth. And then coming back, so working with those five elements, allowing the earth to dissolve into the water evaporated into the fire into the air into the ether and space, and then from pure consciousness, making your journey back. So then coming with that clarity as just being pure consciousness, and then coming into materialization, working with the five elements all the way back into form. Now, through the process that he described of the living and the dying, or rather the dying, I work with that process to support my grandparents. So when my grandparents were ready for their transition, it's like I had a much more understanding of their process. For example, when they had certain dreams about water and the kidney functions going, when I could feel that the feet were starting to get very cold just a few hours before dying, but the crown and the head really hot. Yeah. So if you don't understand that process, then you may think, oh, they're running a fever and yeah, we need to medicate that. But what was happening is that fire, so that they were going through that dissolution and the fire was moving up and out. So it that really, really helped. Also, funny enough, later when going through the birthing of my children and going through the pregnancy, since I had understood the process of dying now, and I said to myself, hey, for the child to be born coming through, they're dying somewhere else in order to be born here, yes. Right?
Yeah.
So I noticed then that my process of the pregnancy was the reverse of the process of the dying that I had learned through his teaching, and could then very consciously work with that from the moment of conception through all the 9 months into pregnancy and experiencing that with my child inside my womb, that sense of pure consciousness when just around when the conception. And then you're getting the air in the first months of pregnancy, so you also feel more nauseous, you have gas coming up. And then as the child is incarnating, going through that journey into manifestation, then you're getting the hot flashes, and now we're about 3-4 months into pregnancy. So the fire is getting really activated. Your dreams start changing. You're no longer in this gassy air. The morning sickness goes away. Then you will.
Chris, am I still on? I don't know if you've lost me or if you've lost Anna Lois.
Yes, I'm here.
There you are.
Yeah. Something happened. Let me know what was the last. I was seeing you like this.
Okay. You were talking about your, you know, reversing the process. I can't tell you the exact words, but you were talking about, you know, going through the whole, you know, the different trimesters and the different things that are happening then, you know, when the morning sickness goes away and, so you were talking That's about it. That. I don't know how we would stitch that back together again.
Maybe I'll just to summarize that. So working with the five elemental journeys and working with the process of dying, but now in reverse for the process of birth, process of incarnation, then I noticed how it helped me to go through conscious pregnancy, conscious birthing with both my children. And noticing that as they were coming into life in this beautiful new form as this human being, coming from ether, and then going through the stages of air and fire and water and earth. And then when in the womb, the last stage, when you're really in that water as a woman, your womb is very big. You're even holding on, and there's a lot of water in your body. But then when the water breaks, that's what's so beautiful. Then they're coming, they're born into earth. So understanding this process of conscious dying then also helped me for the conscious birthing.
That's a great, wonderful gift that you gave to your grandparents and also to your children.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, that is your 10 best books. There's so much that you you've done and that you are doing that I would love to talk about, but I don't think we're going to have time to go into all of it. But you have written a trilogy of books with Dr. Jean Houston, and I am reading those books now, and they are quite different than anything that I've ever read before in the structure, in how you have chosen to share these keys, you know, with readers through the story of a woman who is, you know, actually experiencing the thing that you are inviting the readers to experience. So how did this trilogy come about? How did your connection with Jean begin? And how was this idea born?
Yeah, well, I had met Jean online a few years before that, and we had some, you know, wonderful conversations, and then we lost touch with each other. And then just before we started, a few months before we started, or Siri connected with me, I had this dream that if our minds were to come together, something new could be born. And it was a very, very strong dream of us meeting there, and it's like both our worlds meeting, as if I was coming from the future and she was coming from the past, because she's also a historian in those ways, in the mythology. And so I reached out to her and I said, Jean, it's a very, very powerful dream. I really feel we need to do something together. I do not quite know what it is, but I'd love to speak further. And that got lost. And I had just sent her an article of mine about attracting the future into being. That was a publication that was also part of my PhD. And so I didn't hear anything back. I sent everything. I thought, okay, maybe she's just very, very busy. And of course, so many people contact her. And then I was in the Netherlands at that time. It was February 2020, end of February 2020. And the COVID crisis just happened. And I had just a few more days. I was going to go back to Mauritius to my children. And everything closed down. The flights got canceled. And I got stuck in the Netherlands. And actually, I couldn't be with my kids for 7 months. It was very, very hard. And then one morning I woke up and I got her emails. She said, Anneloos, we need to talk. You know, I've just read your article and it's amazing. We've got so much work to do. So great, you got my message. Yeah. And the funny thing with Jean, it's like, because I'd said to the universe, look, I don't know how to get in touch with her. You do it, because I tried email and everything else. So what happened is he had printed out an article and it had fallen off her desk and it had gone under the carpet on the floor. And one morning her dog was pawing away at the carpet because it was this little bit of paper that was under the carpet. And she said, what's that? She pulled it up and that was my article. And that's when she started reading it. And so I thought, Jean is, you know, she loves dogs. So okay, of course, the only way to reach Jean is you got to work with a dog. So the universe made sure that her dog saw it and then she got in touch. And then as we started to talk and explore, the first thing that we thought, let's do a course together. And I started to write down what we could do for a course. And she read that and she said, do you realize that this is a book? This is not just a course. This is so much more. What if we turn that into a book? And I said, okay, that's great. And I said, my passion really is about the future. I said, I feel very strongly, I experienced that again during the pregnancy, that there is a new cycle of time and consciousness, so that we have within us the future potentials of this emerging new era. And it's not the future of the past. It's not this kind of continuity of time. It truly is a new cycle. It's like our evolutionary next step. But yeah, as imaginal cells, yes, that's already there. And she said, okay, how will we work that story? I said, well, that's future humans. This is, you know, this is to me what it means to live the path of the future humans. I was going through COVID at that time, hence Rose also going through COVID, the main character of the story, the big book, The Quest of Rose, begins with her being hospitalized. Yeah, I was not hospitalized, thankfully, but I was going through my own deep healing of working with this virus as well. So the practice that you find even there in the first chapter is a practice that I developed for myself in order to be able to work with this virus and to work with my body's wisdom and the virus, and not trying to kind of reject it and put it away, but seeing how can I integrate it? Yeah? Yes. How can I work with this and understand it differently? And so then the first process that we'd written had become very, very big. And then we say, okay, clearly, then it becomes unreadable if we make it into a trilogy. So this is how then we took most of book, what we had already worked on, into The Crest of Rose and Return of the Avatars. The second book came later. And then now, you know, in the process of book three. And that's when we felt, because there's so many storylines in there. There's the fictional woven with the non-fiction. There's also some real life characters like Jude. Rose will be talking then to Jude Carafin and asking her the stories about the cosmology. In the second book, Hazel Henderson, just before she died, became a character in that book and could pass on her wisdom in those ways, which we purposefully did so that we could honor her life as well. So it weaves all of this together, but this is when we reflected on what can make it truly transformational, and let's then really put practices in. So we really want to invite the reader that when you're becoming part of the journey, that our intention all along was that when you read it, you're going through the consciousness states of the future humans, because we all are those future humans. So therefore the practices are all, and all of those practices have been written from those very particular states of consciousness. They're not just like, okay, what shall I write about? And not at all. It was like really in that stage of consciousness, to know what it activates within us, what latent capacities it activates, how we can expand our greater human potential. And then every chapter has this integration section that then summarizes it. And it also gave me an opportunity then, that whole journey, spiritual journey that I've gone through for all of those years, all these different initiations, all these different visions, to really bring that together all in a coherent way as an entire system. So this is also where the keys, the cosmic keys come from. Every key holds a perspective from that non-duality, from understanding that kind of fundamental nature of reality, so that we don't get lost in these duality traps that society so often gets caught in. So each of those nine keys offers that deeper perspective of how to work with the complexities of life and the challenges. And then in the second book, you get seven architect tools. Every tool represents a power of consciousness and helps you know that when that potential activates, how do you develop the powers of that beautiful future consciousness?
And, you know, it's interesting because are you doing a course with this as well?
Yes, we have. So we have two online courses. We have the Catalyst course for book one and the Future Humans Quest for book two. Yes.
Okay, because as I'm reading it and I'm reading some of the you know, the keys at the end, the summaries, the the integrations, and also especially when Rose's grandmother is taking her through a meditation. It was, you know, I'm reading the meditation and I was thinking, I wish you'd recorded that so that I could just switch it on now and listen to it instead of having to read it. But if you're doing that, I mean, that's wonderful. How, obviously the book has been received well, you know, Silver Nautilus, Gold Nautilus, you know, what sort of feedback are you getting?
A lot of people, what they're all sharing is how it profoundly changes their lives because of the transformation that they feel. They're getting very vivid dreams, synchronicities opening up. Some people are saying is that they feel like they're reading it on so many different levels. I've had one woman who said, says, it's like something in me understands it, whereas my mind doesn't, but something else understands what this is for. Yes, exactly. You're going, what? Yes. Yeah. And then she says, and then it comes to her the next day. It comes in dreams, comes in people that she meets. So most of the readers, they're experiencing a deep transformation that goes through it. And that's why, the book is coded that way. It really is written on all these different levels. And so the deep cosmology is there. And then the storylines, but it really is at many different layers. And so also when you go back to it, you'll read different passages again and again.
Quite a unique, quite a unique book. And, you know, for viewers, you and I are going to have an interview in a few weeks' time solely yes. about the book on our sister show, What Is Going On? We don't have time to go into all of that now, but we will dive a lot deeper
Thank
then.
You.
Before we leave, I want to ask you about your, you're doing a co-hosting, a podcast with Jean, aren't you, on the
That's right.
Future Humans.
The Future Humans, Future Humans podcast, exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, to be in conversation with people who are walking the Future Human path.
So you're talking to people who are already doing that?
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
So,
yes.
What kind of conversations, what kind of people? Tell me some of the names that you're talking to.
Lynn McTaggart we had on the show, and Donna Eden, David Feinstein, yep. Bruce Lipton
yep.
was there, Irvin Laszlo.
Irvin, yeah.
Yeah, so these are some of the people, or many of them good friends. Jude was there as well. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, all people that have walked this path before us and have a lot to share.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that's in the, you know, in the show as well. It's also about honoring them, right? It's saying, hey, tell us more about how are you walking that future human potential that is in you? Yeah. How are you enabling these new futures for humanity? Because that's also what this future human potential is about. It's to me, there's so much hope in that.
Yes.
Because it's, then you feel like there's a greater future that's attracting us forward. Through the challenges of our time. Yes.
Yeah. So you also, you're the author of Love Letters from Mother Earth. And you narrated a version called Messages from Mother Earth.
Yes.
What kind of messages are you getting?
Ah. Well, that was a very special book and the messages. So there was 13 letters that came through. This was in 2016. And in fact, in that time I was doing my PhD, I stopped it for a year because the messages that were coming through were so powerful and so direct. Yeah? I just could not combine that with science. So I just really took the time to listen. So it reached out to Mother Earth, and this was just after the terrorist bombing in Paris. And I said, Mother Earth, you know, we are your children. And you love us. What do we need to understand? What do we need to do differently as humans to stop this violence? This can't go on. And what do we need to understand about ourselves? And that is in those letters, she started to share this journey. The journey also from her as a planetary mother, the perspective of, you know, coming into life, the purpose of the sacred fire, the masculine and the feminine principle, the sacred darkness of the feminine. And how that got distorted. And so how the darkness then was seen to be something to be afraid of rather than a warm space that the feminine wisdom and quality receives the masculine in it, so it can become conscious and aware of itself. And she started to share these cycles in this journey of the quadrants and explaining the cycles of time, and that we are now going through a very, very powerful period of convergence. The convergence of many different cycles, but that's really important in this convergence, that all this diversity that we have become and all these different perspectives come together so that there can be the birth, the promise of a new beginning. So our biggest message was that we are the promise of a new beginning, but that it means that we need to activate that process from a trinity, another duality. So saying so much of humanity got lost, seeing the world dualized. We have dualized political systems, dualized economic systems, but life is a great trinity. So she shared in that letter also the process of how creation unfolds in trinities and manifestation in quadrants. So to use both those structures in the appropriate time, so that the convergence then in all these quadrants in the fifth world that becomes possible through the convergence of the quadrant, and that in that convergence, out of that is born a new cycle of time, a new cycle of consciousness. So we are part then of the great renewal, and we are being renewed as well, and to have hope and trust in that as humanity to work with that process.
And that's something that's very important for people to hear, because we really do seem to be, you know, at the very nadir of, you know, things on planet Earth. So many people have so much anxiety and depression and fear for the future. And we're seeing everything, you know, fall, which of course it has to, in order to build anew. But it is very painful for so many people. So I think anything that can give them, you know, some hope for the future is...
Exactly. Yeah. And to reach out. I mean, Mother Earth, she's a living being. So we forget sometimes she's also in the process of renewing herself. We don't yet know what that means for us in human life. But she's a very powerful being. She's been around for a very, very long time.
Yes.
And she is a mother of life. So connect with her, talk to her, work with her. And instead of being only focused on what's falling away, what are the structures that are no longer working, where a lot of the pain also is, look what's seeking to emerge. And knowing that, you know, despite everything else, life will renew. And as it renews, renew it through a higher order of possibility. Then it becomes a transformation. Then it's not the renewal, it's not a circle, it's a spiral. Then it's not about, oh, this goes away, so I want that back. No. As you let go and you trust and you surrender, there is a deeper rebirth. But allow the energy of the old to be recycled, to go back to the great unity.
Yes.
And then it comes from that great unity. It's born a new cycle. Yes.
Mm. Well, I wish I could talk to you for another hour, but unfortunately we can't. So we'll save some more for the next interview that we do. I really appreciate you joining us today. And I want to thank you for adding your 10 best list of spiritual books to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's library of recommendations. You know, it's a real gift to the archive. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Also tell us, where can people connect with you? And also the courses that you and Jean are doing.
That's right. So yes, there are two websites, futurehumans.world. This is where, from the work that Jean and I have been doing in the courses. And there's also earthwisecenter.org. And center is written in the European way, not the American way. and every month I give a coaching class where we go through the teachings of the future humans. So that there's this continuous support. There's a whole community that's been building around that. It's been beautiful for years now. We've been meeting like that. So people can also join me every last Tuesday of the month. I'm holding this class to go deeper into the teachings, work with the practices, and supporting people through the changes with those keys, with those codes.
And so that is on the Future Human website?
Yes, futurehumans.world. You'll find that there. And then you look for coaching at the top of the menu. You'll find the classes there. Yes. And everyone is,
Anna Lois, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for this great conversation and everything you're doing.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. That's it for this week. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'll be back at the same time next week with another 10 best interview for the No BS Spiritual Book Club. Till then, it's goodbye from me, and thank you again to Dr. Anna Lois Smithman.
Thank you so much.